वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
he had offered his daughter to a person who was not only poor but devoid of all culture. Her father might have been thinking that although she was a chaste woman, greatly adherent to her husband was in a deplorable condition. To counteract such thoughts, Sati said that the opulence possessed by her husband could not be understood by materialistic persons like Daksha and his followers, who were flatterers and were engaged in fruitive activities. Her husband's position was different. He possessed all opulences, but he did not like to exhibit them. Therefore, such opulences are called avyakta, or unmanifested. But if required, simply by willing, Lord Shiva can show his wonderful opulences. And such an event is predicted here, for soon it would occur. The opulence Lord Shiva possesses is enjoyable in renunciation and love of God, not in material exhibition of sense gratificatory methods. Such opulences are possessed by personalities like the Kumaras, Narada, and Lord Shiva, not by others. That's the first paragraph of the Dutta. Sevita. He's commenting on that phrase, and now he's commenting on Duma Bhartana. In this verse, the performers of the Vedic rituals are condemned. They've been described here as dhuma vartavihi, those who maintain themselves on the remnants of sacrificial foodstuff. There are two kinds of foodstuff offered in sacrifice. One kind is offered in fruitive ritualistic sacrifices, and the other, the best, is food offered to Vishnu. Although in all cases Vishnu is the chief deity on the sacrificial altar, the performers of fruitive rituals aim at satisfying various demigods to achieve in return some material prosperity. Real sacrifice, however, is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, and the remnants of such sacrifices are beneficial for advancement in devotional service. The process of elevation by performing sacrifices other than those aimed at Vishnu is very slow, and therefore it has been condemned in this verse. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has described the ritualistic performers to be like crows, because crows delight in eating the remnants of food which has been thrown into the dustbin. All the brahmanas who were present for the sacrifice were also condemned by Sati. That's the second paragraph, and here's the third. Whether or not King Daksha and his flatterers could understand the position of Lord Shiva, Sati wanted to impress upon her father that he should not think her husband to be without opulence. Sati, being the devoted wife of Lord Shiva, offers all kinds of material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva. This fact is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. He makes reference twice in the 10th canto. Some discussion on this topic. Lord Shiva's worshippers sometimes appear more opulent than the worshippers of Lord Vishnu, because Durga, or Sati, being the superintendent in charge of material affairs, can offer all material opulences to the worshippers of Lord Shiva in order to glorify her husband. Whereas the worshippers of Vishnu are meant for spiritual elevation, and therefore their material opulence is sometimes found to decrease. These points are very nicely discussed in the 10th canto. Mava Padavya Pitir Asmat Astita Ya Yagya Shalashu Nadhuma Vartavihi Tad Anat Truptire Asu Vridhir Edita Avyakta Linga Avaduta Sevita. My dear Father, the opulence we possess is impossible for either you or your flatterers to imagine. For persons who engage in fruitive activities by performing great sacrifices are concerned with satisfying their bodily necessities by eating foodstuff offered as a sacrifice. We can exhibit our opulences simply by desiring to do so. This can be achieved only by great personalities who have renounced self-realized souls. Avaduta Sevita. The path of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the same as the path of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings are based upon Srimad Bhagavatam. For that reason, when Srila Prabhupada was given the assignment to take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world, Prabhupada fulfilled that by doing Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the basis of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And even when his mission was to complete the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, he stopped after the first canto and then did teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's a summary of the 5 main dialogues where Lord Chaitanya is speaking and different persons are receiving his teachings. He was fulfilling. I didn't understand it at the time, but I was thinking, wow, this teachings of Lord Chaitanya is really tough. Like chewing a walnut or something with the shell still on. It's really... because it was so elevated. But it's the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And teachings of Lord Chaitanya are the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sati is giving a little class on this point, that the relative position, we've been discussing this because it's the theme, the relative position of the rituals within the Vedas. We can describe them as the karma kanda rituals of the Vedas. Or we can describe them as the duties of a householder, the ashram duties of one who is situated in family life. So this was the argument that Daksha was giving to Narada. Again, the opulence of Narada was not understood. The teaching, that the actions of Narada were not understood by Daksha. Because Daksha was saying, you've deprived my sons of the means of purification. His idea of the means of purification was very narrow. That is, you get involved in the material energy and you gradually purify yourself by the processes of sacrifice and atonement. for the mistakes made in sacrifice as well as your involvement in the ritual energy. And the combination of the injunction and the atonement for the mistakes made, then gradually, he was explicit about it, gradually one becomes detached from the idea of enjoyment. Like, it didn't work. It wasn't satisfying. But one, his argument is, one needs to go through that to get on the other side. Like, you know, you can't just go from brahmachari to sannyas. You have to go through household life, and household life means, because that's what the Haryashvas and Sabalashvas, they just bypass grihastha life. So his message was, you deprive them of the means of purification. It's an act of cheating them and cheating the world, because you can't just go from this to that. Well, that's because he didn't understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the process of in Bhagavat Marg. Now, in the case of Lord Shiva, he need not undergo the process of Bhagavat Marg even, because he's already at the stage of perfection. And that stage of perfection is this, as we heard in yesterday's verse, nivritti. Or beyond nivritti is where one is beyond even the regulations of his renounced order, the sannyas order. So here's Lord Shiva, he's a grihastha. Not only is he a grihastha, he's married to Daksha's daughter. And he's not doing these sacrifices. And not only that, so on and so on about Lord Shiva's behavior, and his association, his cleanliness, and so many things. And so he's not even a cultured person, and he's absolutely poor. Look at him. So, Sati, the point here, one of the points is that Sati wants her father to know he's not poor. He has opulences that you can't even conceive of. And pretty soon you're going to see some of those opulences of Lord Shiva. He's so opulent that you're going to be finished by his undisclosed or avyakta, unmanifested opulences. His opulences, besides being not disclosed, they're of a different nature. They're not based upon worldly enjoyment. The value system and the sense of happiness and the sense of knowledge, they're all for elevated souls. They're on a platform altogether different. And naturally that leads to people that are attached, you know, having a problem, not relating with persons who are deeply devoted. Like, get a job. I had this, I'll share a little experience. Was once going from, coming from a GBC meeting, and went to Calcutta and took an overnight train to go to my next destination. So, generally what I like to do when I ride in those overnight trains is immediately just take rest, because whatever is going on in the car is just distraction and useless. So take rest, get up early before those people get up, take a little snog in the place there and chant. So most of my chanting is done before they even wake up. So that's what I did. Is the seat right across from me was this businessman, kind of a puffed up businessman. So after I had nearly my rounds completed, he got up and, you know, brushed his teeth and drank his tea, and then looked at me and said, "So?" I knew I was going to get like yelled at by the man. "So?" Like, you know, I'm up here and you're down here. That was what "so" meant. And he said, "Do you require money to maintain yourself?" like, you parasite. And I said, just as you do, I require money to maintain myself. And so, we're living off the energy of those of us who work. And I said, the energy of those who work, where does that come from? And that which maintains those who are working, where does that come from? So I am being maintained, and you are being maintained by the same source. Picked up his paper and held the paper up so he couldn't have to see me. So that's the non-religious fruitive worker, but the religious fruitive worker has similar thoughts. And they're thinking this is the means of elevation, and those that aren't following the means of elevation, in Daksha's case at least, the means of elevation is this, and there isn't something else. Vedavararata. This is Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. For the most part, the people that are followers of the Vedas have a very specific view. The purpose, the activities of the Vedas are for elevation to higher standards of sense gratification, and there's nothing more than this. And those that don't follow are shameful, uncultured, uncivilized, and destitute. So what Prabhupada writes is, Lord Shiva possesses all opulences, but he did not like to exhibit them. Therefore, such opulences are called avyakta, or unmanifested. The Sanskrit of the verse is avyakta linga. Linga, cause, is unmanifested. And because the cause is unmanifested, that a cause can conceal or disclose at will. That's what Sati is saying. She and her husband have opulences that may not be manifested, but they're vast opulences. And whereas your opulence, she indicates, is dhuma vartmavihi. Vartma, the path of maintaining oneself by the activities of sacrifice and accepting the remnants of the foodstuff offered in sacrifice as one's sustenance. So, for this reason, because there's this resemblance between the Karmakanda ritual and the Vaishnava practice of offering things to Krishna, they think it's the same thing. And it's an offense to think it's the same thing, because it's not the same thing. Turn it around the other way, and in Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that a devotee, if offered that which has been offered to the demigods, should not accept it. But if there's something that's been offered to Vishnu, and then the prasad of Vishnu is offered to the demigods, then one can accept it, because it's Vishnu prasad. But, you know, the simpler form is one should eat only that which is offered to Krishna, and not otherwise. But specifically, here, it's contaminating of one's insistence. It implicates one in sinful reaction. Whereas, so Daksha is thinking it's sinful that he's not doing these rituals. The counter is, one who takes the remnants of those foods offered in Karmakanda rituals, it involves one in sin, or karmic implication. very different perspective on the same act. And then the other is this, the offense is to think that Vishnu worship and Vishnu Prasad and Vishnu's name are the same level as a karmakanda activity. Not so. Not so. A couple other points from this second paragraph. Prabhupada remarks, the process of elevation by performing sacrifices other than those aimed at Vishnu is very slow, and therefore it has been condemned in this verse. I just gave a seminar in Harinath Chintami, so I'm quite aware of how the approach of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is different. His time was different, his audience was different than Srila Prabhupada's. And he speaks very explicitly and repeatedly about the varnashram duties that fall within the realm of karma, because you're enjoined, and so you're neutralizing the sinful reactions by doing your duty, and gradually there's elevation. I described this process yesterday. By doing those particular duties and sacrifices connected with those duties, there's involvement with qualified brahmana, and recognizing ultimately Vishnu is the bhokta of that sacrifice, although initially one isn't thinking Vishnu, one is thinking the deva, and Ganesh remove the obstacle so that I can get that benediction from that deva. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that what's the purpose of this gradual process? It's so that one can come to the position of nishkam karma by the purification of attachment to Vishnu and the connection with the Vedic process. And then be more receptive for the mercy of the devotee so that one can gradually come to the platform of bhakti and take shelter of Krishna or Vishnu. That's the intended purpose. Again and again he speaks about this, but saying that it's, in this age, it's too slow, and people are too lazy, and there aren't qualified brahmanas, and there's reasons why that process is just not effective for this age. So that's what's being said. But it does have that, why is it there? It's to take one gradually to that stage. Like, Bhunam Jamanamante, Yanavam Nam Papajita. At a time of knowledge and fruitive work. We had this discussion yesterday when this young devotee was here speaking about gradually increasing, just adding Krishna's stir. Premanjana. So, our process is not just well, Prabhupada said just add Krishna. I was thinking about that, and it applies to what's here. Anyabhi lajata shunyam jnana karmadhinavatam. Not just add Krishna, it's not jnana, not karma. But we want to get to that position, so you can get to that position perhaps by just adding, as Krishna Pita said, so much Krishna, there's no room for jnana and karma. But one has to be, you know, extremely qualified to just keep adding Krishna so much there's no room for jnana and karma. At some point it's actually getting rid of those things that are opposed to Krishna bhakti. Anukoyena Krishna anushilana. Accepting that which is favorable to Krishna implies rejecting things that are not. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya vajanam. While accepting that which is favorable to Krishna, the implication is the opposite. You eliminate things that are not. And in the case of Padma Prana, it's not just implied, it's explicit. Anyway. We need to cultivate eliminating unwanted things, not just leave them around and just let Krishna stir. Karma Mishra Bhakti. Our teaching is Shuddha, go for it. Cultivation of Shuddha Bhakti, progressively. That's a whole topic. So besides it's very slow and not appropriate, even in former age, very slow, here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying something very strong, that this taking of the remnants of the sacrifice from Karmakanda rituals is a crow's business. That's very strong. Because this is, you know, from the Vedas. The Vedas give these rituals, and you take the sacrifice, the fruits of the sacrifice from those rituals, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is coming along and saying, this is for the crows. From the perspective of the swan, yes. From the perspective of what absolute benefit is being derived, well, it's a lot softer to say, well, it's very slow. It's much stronger to say it's like crows. And this reference that I gave from Harinam Chintamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying also, it's not to be done by a Vaishnava. When you understand the higher principle, you don't indulge yourself in a prior preliminary leading up to a principle. You take the higher principle. You cultivate that at least. Now the final paragraph is this reference to the 10th canto. I didn't do my little research before coming to the class. Where in the 10th canto is this discussed? But I remember the discussion. A question is raised, why are the devotees of Lord Shiva sometimes very opulent and the devotees of Vishnu are sometimes very poor? Of course, we also find devotees of Vishnu that can be very opulent. Lord Jambarish was very opulent. Pandavas are very opulent. Devotees can be also be very opulent. But if one is attached, and the answer is, if one is attached to the mood of enjoyment, Lord Hari is very kind. He takes away the attachment. So that one can become just attached to him. It's not a prerequisite you have to be poor. Or if you become a devotee, Krishna will take away whatever wealth you have. Obviously not so. There's so many opulent temples of persons who have used their wealth to make the worship of Vishnu very opulent. And the worshippers then enjoy on that same level of opulence as Lord Vishnu. But the purpose is different. That's what Prabhupada is making the point of here. The purpose of Vishnu worship is spiritual elevation, whereas Karmakanda rituals and those types of sacrifice, they're for material opulence, increasing those who are so desirous. And Sati, the point made earlier, she's the one, the worshippers of Lord Shiva, she gives that opulence to them. So Lord Shiva's not lacking in opulence, nor is she. So don't think I'm destitute because I'm married to a poor guy. She's the deliverer of the opulence of those who have opulence. So one who, just stepping back from the whole dialogue, a person who is materially attached cannot understand the person who is spiritually elevated. They can't even understand the process of spiritual elevation because of material attachment. So, the Bhagavatam's message, practically speaking for us, is we should be very clear about the goal of the Bhagavatam, where the Bhagavatam wants to take us, the one who wants to take us to Krishna. And that going to Krishna is a path of nivritti, and in the path of nivritti, the stage of perfection, is those personalities have opulences, that one cannot even imagine. Narda's opulence. He is a sannyasi. What is his opulence? But you know, he can freely travel anywhere. Not even just like the demigods. He doesn't need a vimana. He just plays on his veena and chants the names of the Lord. He can go anywhere in the upper, lower, and spiritual realm. No ticket required, no visa required, no passport required, no fuel required. Completely free. At will. No austerities and rituals to undergo, like, you know, there's some stockpile of his punya will diminish. He has to keep putting something in the tank so he can... That's not. Nanda is on another platform. Shiva is on another platform. Kumara is on another platform. Because that's the opulence of bhakti, of pure devotion. It leads to spiritual opulence. And even those who have great spiritual opulence, they may be able to exhibit great mystic powers beyond the conception of people. They don't like to do that. They may sometimes do that. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in the assembly of Prakashananda Saraswati, he exhibited his effulgence, like his Brahman effulgence, because they're worshippers of Brahman. He exhibited his Brahman effulgence. So dazzling, was like another sun was sitting at the place for washing feet. So from time to time he would purposely exhibit his opulence, showing the brahmana whose offerings 3 times he ate when he was calling his deity's name to take the offering of rice. Mind came, ate the rice. The third time he showed his form of Krishna, Gopal. This is calling, Gopal, please come and take the meal. So he came. What is the fault? You called me. So he would sometimes show his opulence, but otherwise not. And I was a new devotee. I'll just do a little Prabhupada story and I'll end. Prabhupada had such opulence, but rarely exhibited. I heard the same story from 2 different people, and so then later I saw a picture of the thing. It was in London. I believe it was in the Bury place, or it might have been in Soho, I'm not sure. No, it wasn't Soho, but it was so Bury place. Anyway, there was a deity installation, and the devotees were doing their makeshift altar. And the makeshift altar was very heavy, so they were placing the deities underneath the altar to be worshipped underneath the altar. And as they were doing so, one of the columns was knocked, and something like that, and the very heavy marble overhang piece started to fall, and 2 young American devotees tried to hold this marble thing up in the air, and they couldn't. It was too heavy. So Prabhupada came, and alone he held it up while they put the columns back in place. Where'd that string come from? Then I saw later a picture, you know, that not, you know, always the thing is falling, someone's taking a picture of it, but you know, the overhanging piece was very heavy. And the devotees were describing this is what happened. So in service to Krishna, one who is fixed in pure devotion, Krishna can give ability that's beyond ordinary ability for his service in reciprocation of the devotion. We wish to serve Krishna. So Any discussion? Put in simple language, Sadama could handle it. Sadama was happy without happiness. Sadama could be happy with happiness. But he went because of the concern of his wife. And his wife's concern wasn't just, I want, you know, nice, fine things. I'm concerned about you. So, to fulfill or satisfy that concern of the wife of Sadama, the opulence was manifest. And he could never as he was going home from Dwaraka, he was thinking, Krishna is so kind. Very nice drama. Krishna is so kind. He knows my heart. So he didn't even ask. Because if I had asked, as my wife had wanted me to ask, then Krishna would have given me something, and then I would have fallen down becoming enamored by material opulence. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. And then when he got to his home, he was thinking, Krishna is so kind. He knew the circumstance, even I didn't speak it, and see what he's done. Krishna is so kind. Because of that attachment to loving and serving, just attached to Krishna, then worldly opulence doesn't affect the person. Or absence of even apparent necessities doesn't affect such a person. That was the platform of Sudama. So it was to show us to glorify Sudama. He's with it. He's with and without. He's the same. Krishna is so kind. Yes. Yes.
Sometimes we also like go and we get some martial shots if we accept it.
According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, no. So visiting the temple is one thing, and the visiting of the temples that was performed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to respect this great devotee. But the consciousness of the pujaris are not necessarily seeing him as a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, respecting him as a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. If they were, that it would Vishnu Prasad gets offered to Lord Shiva, that's not the program. It's something else. That instruction of Bhakti Nirvana is very clear. But the consciousness of the person who is making the offering is not that. And so he's accepting according to their mood. Out of his kindness. But our instruction is to accept only that which has been offered to Krishna. Yes? And that's not something that's been offered to Krishna. Consciousness is different. You can say, you know, thank you very much, and, you know, put it in a bag, I'll give it to somebody outside or something like that. With no disrespect to the face of the person. But they would take it if it's disrespect.
Many times, even Amalasa also, sometimes we look at Guru's
But the consciousness is different in that case. It's very different. It's very different. Because, at least it should be very different. The consciousness should be, it's not just to my Guru Maharaj, but, you know, it's not impersonal, it's to somebody else, but it's, he's my link with Krishna. And these other Saivites are not, the Shaivites are not thinking that. This is my link to Krishna. Think about it. Yes?
Let's clarify once more. I have little doubts on this subject too.
Say it again?
I have some doubts on
this. You have doubts?
Yes. What I'm thinking, maybe I have some doubts on myself.
Okay.
Maybe what I'm hearing is perfectly right, Maharaj. Accept it with me.
Okay.
So my question on that subject.
You're going to, but. I have no doubts, but.
Really, the circumstances that I'm hungry is starving me.
Starving? You don't look starving to me.
Starving,
you look quite healthy.
I'd like to further add to Chaitanya Prabhu that circumstances are such that if we accept that, according to this, we should not. But we, I think, I'm not that elevated so that I can come to that platform.
So yes, you are. Yes, you are. You could follow that instruction. That's not a difficult one.
Anyway, in the past, I have done like this. If I had been offered food like this in the Nathasa, I just chant three times Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and I think.
Anyone else? Take that's been properly offered. Life is short. Don't do this. Take proper prasadam. It's such a simple thing. And it's a matter of controlling the tongue. Controlling the tongue. But by controlling the tongue, then you can control your other senses, and then you can control the mind, and then you can always think of Krishna and not have your mind agitated by other thoughts. Do you like the agitation of some of those other thoughts? So control the tongue. It's very simple. Take only that which has been offered to Krishna. And it's not like, you know, just what you just described. I look the other way. Say Krishna, Hare Krishna, three times.
Okay, if, let's say that I chant Maha Mantra and I remember whatever. And you are saying the person who has done this, his consciousness was different.
Yes.
If I eat that, let's say, and with the name of Krishna and
First of all, if you make such an offering to Krishna, is there any guarantee that Krishna has accepted such an offering? Yeah, I what you just described to me is not proper. I would not recommend that you do like that. Whatever your practice is, you know, hit the delete button and go back and rewrite the program. Do it differently. Yeah. That's okay. Then someone that has proper understanding should either do or explain to the person how to do. It's not just whether they're initiated or not, it's just offered with in a proper manner, with love and devotion. Then it's fine. Something?
We buy something in the store that is already like
a... Do you have a home? Do you live somewhere?
Yeah, very, very.
Okay, then take that which you bought in the store back to your home, in proper consciousness and make a proper offering in a proper, clean, respectful manner, and then take prasad. Is that okay? Well, then you control the tongue. You wait till you get home. Traveling? Is that what you're talking about? Okay. I guess there's different, you know, approaches to that issue. One approach is, I just say no thank you. Another approach is, you know, depends on the circumstance. Somebody may be at a, you know, part of their life is they regularly have to go to meetings and they have a luncheon at the meetings, and so they ask, what would you like? And they say, no thank you. So instead they might say, well, you know, I'll take salad or fruit and yogurt. Now what do you do? So in those circumstances, in a proper manner, not just like, you know, when nobody's looking, or, you know, you want to make, as far as possible, make a proper offering. At least within one's mind. At least. But those are, you know, the exception. And then the rule is, when you're going to work, you take some prasad with you from home that you've offered to your deity. You got your little lunch pail or whatever it is. And that's what I do. You know, I'm on a long journey somewhere. I take some prasad with me. And then people will come and ask, you know, they're like in an airplane, what would you like? No, thank you. Anything. Water. I brought my own. See? I'm okay. If you have some food, I'll put some food that I can offer. It's simple. You have something that's in your life, either regular or irregular, you take only Krishna prasad. And if you're in a circumstance where you need to make an offering because it's whatever, something happened or whatever, you make a proper offering. There's one devotee, it's a funny story, Sankirtan story. There's a traveling Sankirtan devotee whose name I won't mention. And he had a problem controlling his tongue. So he told me later on, years later, he used to go in stores and offer everything in the store. Everything offerable. And he'd make, say the prayers and everything becomes prasad, and then he would buy things and consider it prasad. But he knew the problem was he couldn't control his tongue. And so what he did was he ordered from Bhaktivedanta Archives a whole one of those, you know, albums of front and back, you know, what it was, audio cassettes, front and back, where Prabhupada spoke on the verse, Sevan Mukihi Jivado Svayam Eva Svaratyada. How important it was to control the tongue. So that's just like on the do not, but the do is take Krishna prasad. And what's prasad is not just say some sounds. You offer with love and devotion. It must be done like that. I had the situation as a Sankirtan leader long for some period of time in the Brooklyn Temple. We had these things where they would prepare prasad for the devotees to take out on lunch. And the whole temple went out on Sankirtan every Saturday. So one time there was not enough sandwiches and not enough this and that. So I went down in the boba room and got fruits and dried fruits and some nuts. Put them on a little cabinet, opened up the shelf, put a picture of Prabhupada and made an offering. And one of the older devotees saw me doing that. They didn't say anything, but they told the president. The president called me to his office later on, you know, doing a nice service, but can you describe what you do when there's not enough prasadam for the devotees. And they described what it is. He said, that's not so good. Just make a proper offering. That was a nice lesson. But it should be with a proper offering. Because it's your offering to Krishna. It's not like a convenience store or something. It's devotion. If we want devotion in our life, we have to act. And this matter of controlling the tongue is very important. It, as an expression of devotion. How do we do it? So, I don't want to dictate standards and how you devotees do things here. I just have a strong conviction in controlling the senses, doing things in that manner. Clean place. That would be instructed. Make a clean place. If you need to make offerings, we'll help you. We'll set up a little altar area in the Sankirtan office and do it in the proper way. Clean. You know, in the right mood. Not hurry up, make an offering, and off we go. It's the devotion with which we offer that Krishna accepts. Okay, I think enough on this topic. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada, have a good day.